From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in the small town of Brooklyn, Iowa, where a young woman was out on her regular evening run. On July 18th, 20-year-old University of Iowa student Molly Tibbetts was jogging through town when a car began to follow her. The driver of the car, Christian Bahena Rivera, told authorities that Tibbetts saw him pursuing her and said that if he didn't leave her alone, she would call the police, and then she took off running. Police say Rivera admitted to chasing Tibbetts down, putting her in his trunk, and later leaving her lifeless body in a cornfield. Molly Tibbetts' murder drew national attention, and for many women who run outdoors, it led to a resurgence in fears of being harassed or attacked while exercising in public. We've heard from a number of women who run, who say when they run, they frequently look over their shoulder to ensure they are safe. Some are trained in self-defense or have learned protective measures from their running groups. Some have escape plans to rely on in the event of an attack. Others run with mace or pepper spray handy. From catcalling to physical violence, women who run say they want men to understand what they're going through. This hour, our guests are sharing their concerns about running in public, exercising in public, frankly, as one of our guests has said, being a woman in public. And we're also going to talk about ideas on how they have to go through these days protecting themselves. Joining us in studio, my colleague at WXXI here and the Rochester Running Company race ambassador, Lisa Familetti. Nice to see you here in the studio.
I know. It's nice to be here.
Well, it's nice to have you here. Eva Petrosino is a communications professional and a runner herself. Nice to see you here.
Hi.
And Maria Hopkins is a college professor and a runner herself. Maria, welcome to you.
Thank you.
On the line with us is Kate Dunleavy. And Kate is a licensed clinical social worker and a therapist and educator for Resolve of Greater Rochester. Kate, welcome to you as well.
Thank you so much for having me.
I want to start by simply asking our guests what they have gone through on a somewhat regular basis. And before I have any listeners kind of trying to say, well, we're drumming up hysteria or anything like that, I don't want to host a show saying if you're a woman and you run, you're going to get murdered. But let's be honest here. I mean, almost no woman who you will ever meet who runs in public, outdoors, has not been harassed. And Runner's World did a survey on this. According to their survey results, a majority of female runners have safety concerns. 63% choose routes to run where they figure it's unlikely they'll be harmed. 60% limit their runs to daylight hours only. More than 70% carry a phone with them and let someone know their route and when they plan to be back. And 54% said they always, often, or sometimes head out the door concerned that they could be assaulted or received unwanted physical contact during a run. 54%. You know what the answer is for men on that? 7% of male runners worry about that. This is on a survey of more than 2,500 women. More than half of women under 30 said they have experienced harassment while running, and frankly, it's probably a lot higher than that. A full 94% of women who have been harassed said their harassers are men. So let's go around the table. Lisa Familetti, none of this is surprising to you.
No,
what are your
not
experiences?
Well, my experiences have kind of been all over, from people, you know, giving the honk to people rolling down their windows and saying something to you. I was just talking earlier about an experience that I had a couple years ago. I used to live over in the East Ave area. And so one day I went running in the afternoon down East Ave, thinking nothing of it. And I got stopped at a light waiting to cross. And these two gentlemen have their windows down and they're hooting, hollering at me. And I know that they're talking about me because they're pointing right at me and they're yelling out the window. And I'm super uncomfortable. And they're also talking to me in Spanish. So I don't know Spanish. And I don't know what they're saying to me. So God only knows what they're saying. And then it's like, so do I ignore them, which I choose to do, and they keep going? Or do I respond some way? And that's going to have them keep going too. And it just makes you feel super uncomfortable. And this is like broad daylight. It was probably like 4:30 in the afternoon, and it's super uncomfortable. But then there's other concerns too. It's, what time of day am I going to go running? Like I was talking about this morning, I woke up at 6 a.m. and it's dark out. And I was like, there's no way I'm going to go running this morning at 6 a.m. like on my own. I'd have to wait until 6:30 when it's light out, cut my route down, or go later today when it's still light and I feel comfortable. I know so many women who I've talked to, even if we go in groups, we're like, we should go still when it's light out. And you also have to take the normal safety precautions if you run in the dark using reflectors or flashers or something of that nature. But it's just a constant thing. And I go running on the canal and you have to be aware of your surroundings. Are people going to pop out from you here? And also, too, if you do go running in certain areas, if I got hurt or if somebody is following me, where can I run to? Where can I go to? Are there houses? Is there a public place nearby? These are all thoughts that are a normal occurrence when I go running on my own. When I go to Rochester Running Company and I run in groups, I don't have any of those fears because I'm with a number of people.
But even when you're walking in public, this can happen.
Yes. I was telling you earlier, it happened to me yesterday.
Yesterday afternoon.
Yeah. Walking from WXXI, I walked down to Fifth Frame Brewery, was meeting a coworker after work, and I walked over the bridge. So I came out the Genesee Brewery and I walked down St. Paul. In that time span of walking there and back after our meeting, I got honked at four times. I got looked at up and down when I was standing there waiting to cross the road. And I had one guy yell out the window, looking good, girl. And I'm not running and I'm like in work clothes. And that's just a normal occurrence. It's just an everyday thing.
I'll turn to Maria. What are your experiences?
Well, when I started running, I was in college, actually, and I went to the University of Buffalo, and I started at a time when there was actually a bike path rapist on the loose who was raping and murdering women on the running trail that went through campus. And so as a very new runner, I was hearing all the time, like, you stay off that bike trail, you don't go on that bike trail. Thankfully, he was arrested in 2006 after the murder of Joan Diver. So I feel like there's always been this shadow of danger around running, which is really interesting to me because running in itself is not very dangerous. You know, notwithstanding the damage you do to your knees over a lifetime of running, it's a pretty safe activity to engage in, except for the things that are caused by humans on your run, whether it's their cars or their dogs or the harassment that you get. And I would say, no less than once a week am I running and getting yelled at, by someone in a car. Unfortunately, I live in I live in a very rural area. And so usually on my run every day, it's very rare for me to encounter another human being. So I'm typically out there by myself, much to the chagrin of my parents, who still tell me not to run by myself on the country roads. But you're out there by yourself, and a car comes by, and they're yelling things at you. It's very unnerving. And you take this activity that's supposed to be very relaxing, something you do for your mental health, something you do to, like, get back into in your own head after a day or to start a day. And it's filled with anxiety because of people yelling things and that fear that you're going to be harmed.
When you say people are yelling at you, just sort of, again, hooting and hollering?
Hooting, hollering, honking, similar to your experiences, Lisa. Yeah.
Do you run in the dark? Would you run at night?
Never. And I don't know if I would if I lived in a different area, but it is too dark where I live. I wouldn't be able to see anything if I were running at night.
Okay.
Yeah.
Eva, let's talk about your experiences.
So I run in the dark all the time. I have two little kids, and they dictate my schedule and when I can work out and when I can do things that I want to do. So because of that, I most often will run after bedtime, after I put them down to sleep, which is like 7:30, 8 o'clock.
Your kids go to bed early.
Oh, yeah. 7 o'clock bedtime since they were 4 months old.
There
you
go. Yeah.
We have our routine and we stick to that. And similarly, my running routine is like that too. So 7:30 or 8 o'clock, when I set out for my run, if it's dark, I wear my protective stuff, my reflective or my flashing belt or armband or whatever. But those thoughts are always in my head of, what am I going to do if someone comes up on me? What am I going to do if this happens? I always have that next step. So much to the point that, like, I've planned out several scenarios in my, what if it's this? What if somebody just comes up to me and just startles me? Well, I need to have, like, a defensive position that I take. Or what if somebody actually, like, touches me and, like, grabs me? Then I'm going to do this. I've thought about ways to leave evidence behind and, like,
wow.
It, like, really in-depth stuff, Evan.
Wow. And have you ever been in a position where you thought you were in danger?
Not necessarily in danger. So I live in the suburbs. I mean, I live in a great neighborhood. Lots of kids, streetlights, the typical you know, American dream, you could say. But do I feel uncomfortable? Yes. Every time I go out for a run, there are, you know, people mowing lawns or people, whatever, driving into their, in parking in their driveways and stuff like that. There is one stretch of my street that I will no longer run down because one of my neighbors, I mean, it's a little ways away from my house, they will just stand in their driveway and stare at me while I pass by them. And that just, like, it just gives me the heebie-jeebies a little bit because why are you watching me? I always run faster by that house if I have to go that way because it gives me, like, an uncomfortable feeling to be like I'm on show for you. So.
Good boy. Kate, can I ask you to weigh in not just on the Molly Tibbetts case, but what you're hearing from our guests here in studio who are sharing stories that I suspect for some of the men listening. And again, I don't want to be naive, but I think this is a surprise for some men because I will tell you that when I just posted a thread on Twitter, I had a lot of guys who were writing me saying, come on here. Like, what are the odds you're going to get attacked here? And sort of rolling their eyes at this. And so that's one of the reasons we're doing this program is that we don't want to, again, we don't want to spread hysteria, but we want to address what women feel on a regular basis, which is almost at a minimum harassment with some frequency and then a fear that it could get worse. What would you say about this, Kate, and for any man who's sort of like questioning the legitimacy of this?
Oh, gosh. The statistics that you read were so on point earlier, Evan. We hear from women constantly that they feel very unsafe in doing basic everyday things, walking to and from their car from work. On the line of personal experiences, there once a week I work a night job, and I have to be very thoughtful about where I park and who's with me when I leave that job and if I'm working with another male or if I'm working with another woman and how we can partner up to keep one another safe. So we're talking about very basic things. One of your guests was walking in the city during a very normal time of day and was receiving harassment. Women for many, many years have carried the burden of proof of protecting themselves. And we've really socially focused on safety planning and how do women keep themselves safe. And we are now entering into a new part of this conversation, which is, let's get men involved and talk about why women need to keep themselves safe in the first place and how it is that we've come this long with women feeling like they can't do something as simple as go for a run for their mental health, for their physical health, or simply even just because they want to in their neighborhoods and feel safe doing so.
Kate, what is Resolve of Greater Rochester kind of doing about this, and what would you want our listeners to know?
Sure, absolutely. So we talk about safety planning all day, every day with people who call us and with people in the community. We talk about safety planning not only if you're in a situation where there's intimate partner violence, but we talk with people about how do you keep yourself safe in the world at large and what are some very simple things that you can do to keep your awareness levels up. We've also recently partnered with a new company called On the Right. This is a group of men who are experts in Brazilian jiu-jitsu who really understand gender-based violence and are working with us to co-author and create a program called ACT, Assess, Choose, and Take Control is what that acronym stands for. And that's really about teaching women specifically how to be aware, how to stay calm in the face of threats and danger so that they're able to make good decisions for themselves and stay safe. And it kind of moves away from the traditional self-defense of let me become an aggressor and more of how do I protect myself? How do I keep distance between me and this person? How do I examine my environment? How do I disengage and get help as quickly as possible? And Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu in and of itself is a form of martial arts that really focuses on leverage versus strength. So anyone can do it, and it takes away this concept of size between you and your aggressor. And very small people can successfully break grabs and chokeholds and other types of really common attack forms. This has been a really fun and fascinating program to develop because we've had women who have been on the receiving end of gender-based violence coming in, and they've been able to teach us and say things like, no, that's not how I was grabbed. I was grabbed this way. And that's how they twisted my arm so that I felt stuck. And these guys that we're working with are then able to really develop specific technique for real world, real time things that are happening to women that they're experiencing in the world at the hands of men.
Wow. I mean, Eva, is that the kind of scenario you think about? You are the most graphic in describing kind of what goes through your mind. Is that the kind of stuff?
100%. So my husband is very adamant that I know what to do in the case of somebody coming up on me or whatever. He also has instructed our daughter on what to do, who is six, on what to do if somebody ever grabs you. My daughter this summer, I've been running for only about a year, really consistently. I ran in high school, but since that, you know, that started, she's been asking me all summer, this summer, to start running with me. And I kind of hesitated a little bit because, you know, I run on some main roads. Obviously, I wouldn't take her on a main road, but that also, you know, I have a little bit of a fear to allow her to enter into this world of running and being harassed while running or being afraid while running or uncomfortable while running. So
just imagining raising a daughter and just being nervous that if you become a runner, you're probably going to be harassed at a minimum.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's amazing. In a moment, I'm going to read something that it's hard to believe it's real, but I'll read it in a second. But before we do that, let me take a phone call. This is Maggie in Rochester. Go ahead, Maggie.
Hi. So I am a sociology professor, and I do an exercise in my classes where I divide the class by self-identified gender, and I ask the men in the class, what do you do on a daily basis to prevent being sexually assaulted or raped? And their answer is, I avoid jail. And then I ask the women in the class the same question, and they fill a whiteboard. They fill it. I don't go out by myself. I tell people where I am. They have apps where they can communicate with their friends to track each other. The amount of effort that they go through when, like, online dating, like meeting people, doing background checks on people, carrying mace, refusing to live alone, refusing to walk places alone. And I see the look on the faces of the guys in the class, and they have absolutely no idea that this is something that the women in their lives experience, that it's something that dominates your thoughts when thinking about operating in public spaces in the world. And so I think that your guests are so right, but I think it goes so far beyond exercising in public. It goes to living in the world, operating in public spaces. And girls are so painfully aware of these things from such a young age. It is so limiting to us when we're choosing what to do and how to spend our time. And so I just wanted to share that that's something that I see echoed in my classes all the time.
Maggie, thank you. It's one of the reasons we're doing this program, so we all can listen and understand the experiences. And so I want to ask our guests, listening to Maggie's call, listening to their experiences, you're hearing from Kate, from Resolve of Greater Rochester, I want to ask you what you want men to know and do or not do. And before we do that, I want to read from an actual piece written for a website called The Modern Man, which introduces itself as a website that will show you quick and easy ways to instantly experience more success with women. They had a 1,500-word piece called How to Talk to a Woman Who's Wearing Headphones. And Slate Magazine Online wondered, is this real? And the answer was apparently yes, though the piece has now been taken down. But Slate says the essay goes on for a long time. It appears it contains categorically incorrect declarations such as, if a woman wearing headphones is single and hoping to meet a boyfriend or even a new lover, she will usually be happy to take off her headphones to give you an opportunity to create a spark with her. It includes advice for breaking down your headphones wearing prey defense. And Slate goes on to say, it could have just been edited down to say, ignore women's social cues and body language to try to get what you want. That was a real piece. Women wearing headphones, how do you get through that? So let's just start with some questions for all of our guests. When you are running, whether you're wearing headphones or not, do you want anybody to talk to you at any point?
No.
Okay.
That's a pretty firm no for me too.
Okay. Lisa?
If I go running with my group, that's why I go running with the group. I want to talk. But those are usually like, if I'm going running with my group, I'm usually running 10 miles or more. So I want the distraction. But again, I'm with a group of people who I know and trust. If I'm on my own, no. And that's part of the reason to kind of taking this a step further. I used to go work out at the Y.
Yep.
And then I started going to the Rack, which is an all women's gym, because I got annoyed with men talking to me while I was stretching or trying to work out. I'm not going to the gym to meet people. I'm going for the health benefits. It's my me time. I don't want to deal with anybody or worry about getting looks or glances or anything.
Okay. Kate, you want to add to that?
Sure. I think that there is really no more universal sign for I don't want to talk than covering up your ears so you cannot hear things around you. So this really speaks very much to this concept that it is okay to cross women's boundaries, whether they're very overt, I don't want to talk to you language, or that more body language covert boundary, that's still very clear communication that we have this culture where men think it's completely okay to just cross those boundaries without permission. And that's the larger problem that we need to be talking about. And this article sounds like it really shed some light on that.
Yeah. So when I'm out running, and by the way, I run all the time, never once have I experienced anything that our guests are talking about. I don't think about, is this route safe? I don't think about, is it too dark? I don't think about, do I need an escape route? Is anyone going to be around? I'm just not. I don't know in all of my years of running if I've ever felt unsafe a single time. Maybe if a car pulls out that didn't see me. That's pretty much what men have to deal with. I think it's just reality. And so, I am mindful that when I'm passing a woman who's running, like I'm going one way, she's coming the other, I don't want anybody to be scared of me, because women, I'm much more aware that they're fearful of men in general, because for good reason. So I'm wondering, what is the right? Is it just like a nod and a smile? And is that okay? Is that the extent of what's okay? Do you not make eye contact at all? What do you want, Lisa?
I stare people down when I run. I really do, and I think that it kind of creeps them out a little bit, but. But I do. I stare people down who are coming at me, and I do. I usually say hi, and I wave, and I feel like this is going to sound really bad, but that's how I feel like you know who a real runner is compared to somebody who's like, I'm just out for a leisurely jog, because I feel like real runners will say hi back to you, and they'll smile, and then they're like, keep up the good work. Like, it's more of a positive thing for other people who, and then people who are just like, eh, whatever, like, they'll just like, eh, like, they won't say anything back to you. I also do tell people I do a little bit of an experiment on the canal of West Side versus East Side, and I feel like people on the West Side are way friendlier. They always say hi back. They always wave. They always say good morning.
The entire town of Pittsford is about to call you.
I know. It's really, and I love running out there too because it's beautiful. But also too on the West Side, I feel more comfortable running because I know the routes a little bit. Again, the routes. I know the routes better.
Yeah.
I know houses I can go to and stuff like that. So.
Okay, Maria, what do you want runners to do when you see them?
If I happen to be running in a situation where someone's running toward me, it's the same. It's, you know, I will look at them because I, like, if they're walking, running, mm-hmm. whatever,
yeah.
just checking them out, like, are you okay? Are you gonna, you know, and then there's usually a nod and a smile or a good morning or
yep.
or whatever. But what I think is also interesting are those situations where there's someone in front of me. So I'm running and there's someone walking in the same direction in front of me. And that actually scares me way more because I'm thinking as I pass this person, are they going to, you know, are they gonna grab me? Are they gonna chase me? And I always have this feeling like, oh, I wish I had a rear view mirror at this point where I can like sort of see behind me and see what that person behind me is doing. So in those situations, I would love it if people who are, if you're on a trail or a path of some sort, if they would move, you know, kind of make a visible, you know, a visible gesture that they're moving over,
mm-hmm.
Even in an exaggerated way. I appreciate when cars do that as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when cars, they don't necessarily need to pull over, but they do just to show you, they see you. So I think that that's helpful.
Okay. Eva?
Yeah, I agree with both ladies. If ever I have to pass somebody going in the same direction as me, I always make it a point to kind of go a little bit wider around them so they don't feel like I'm coming right up on their shoulders. But I mean, I'm constantly checking over my shoulders for cars, for people, for animals. You never know. So, yeah.
I also think, too, with runners, we also know our cues of what we're supposed to do when we pass people. Like, you're supposed to say on your left or on your right. So also, if somebody's walking, we're not scaring them because we're not out. We don't want to be scaring us, so we're not supposed to scare them. So when I go running a lot through GVP, it's always on your left, on your right, that sort of thing.
Well said. Lisa Familetti, Eva Petrosino, Maria Hopkins joining us in studio, all of them avid runners and talking about what women go through when they run. And Kate Dunleavy on the line with us is a licensed clinical social worker and a therapist and educator for Resolve of Greater Rochester. Cindy emails the program to say, I bike in a rural village and area on a regular basis, and I use my helmet mirror to try to ID vehicles before they pass. Runners and walking women are not alone in being hyper aware of their surroundings. Again, just an extension on what Kate, Lisa, really all of the women on our panel today saying, that we are talking really specifically about running and exercise, but it's sort of existing in the world in public, what women have to go through. We'll take some more of your phone calls if you want to call the program. 844-295-TALK. It's 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI if you're at Rochester. 263-9994. Keith writes to us and says, I was discussing this issue with coworkers on behalf of my girlfriend. She does not run, but she's afraid to walk down our street alone. And I mentioned we wanted to get her pepper spray to carry, and a coworker of mine responded by saying, that's illegal now thanks to Cuomo. Any word if that is true? Thanks. So that is from Keith. Kate, can you start with that?
So I actually don't know if that is true. I don't know if that is a new law or not. I do know that there are different levels of active ingredients in certain types of sprays. And some sprays are more potent and dangerous than others and can really harm people's eyesight permanently. And so I think in terms of the way we view things as weapons, there may be some of those that are either police issue, police grade only, or are difficult to get, and some that are a little bit more acceptable, but maybe less potent or potentially less effective. That can be a good defense. However, one of the things that we talk about a lot in our ACT program is staying calm and grounded, because people, when placed in a dangerous situation where there is a threat, the people you have on your panel are thinking through this regularly, and so are most women. That's very true. But we also have a response. We have a physical fear response, some very instinctive things that happen in our bodies and in our brains that can sometimes prevent us from employing very difficult things that we have not practiced regularly. And so part of the ACT program is teaching women how to be situationally aware. So you're talking about when you're running and coming up alongside of someone or facing someone, that situational awareness of, is this person behaving the way normal runners behave? Is this person giving me space and showing me respect? Is this person looking me in the eye? Or is this person behaving in a bizarre manner that's setting off my alarm bells and telling me I need to be really aware of my safety right now? So there's that component of it. And then we also talk a little bit more about really building pathways in your brain over and over. We use a wheelbarrow analogy. The first time you drive a wheelbarrow through grass, it's very difficult to drive that wheelbarrow. You're hitting bumps and lumps, and there's not a clear path. But if you take that same path over and over and over again, now that path has become much easier to get down. In the ACT program, we teach things like situational awareness, keeping distance and proximity from someone, how to read someone's behavior before they make a move, and then how do you employ leverage-based tactics that have now become so practiced that they are just like walking down that, those pathways in your brain are readily available and they're worn and they're used to it. So it's not this conscious thought of, let me pull my pepper spray out, let me make sure the safety is taken off, and let me make sure I'm far enough away from you that when I spray it, it's actually going to spray you where I need to spray you.
If people want to benefit from these programs, Kate, what can they do?
They can contact Resolve and get information, or they can also contact the owners at On the Right, Derek Romig and Ryan Romig, two brothers that are experts in our area. They're on Instagram, they're on Facebook, and I believe their website should be up and running as well.
Brad writes to the program and says, if you're spending the entire run checking over your shoulder and clutching keys, you've abandoned ration and you're being controlled by fear. If the argument is that fear shouldn't be there, I hear you. If you argue that this is the correct way to approach exercise, you're hyper-focused on an almost mathematical impossibility in exclusion of the mountains of evidence that essentially say you are safe while running.
I'm not willing to accept that 100% of the time I'm going to be safe, or that, you know, 99% of the time I'll be safe, but that 1%, I'm not willing to take a chance. I'd rather be prepared, and I hate to even say it, but I have just accepted this as a way of life. Like, if nothing happens after today, other than maybe people are more aware of what women go through, okay, great. Because I'm comfortable doing what I'm doing. I feel like I can probably handle myself in most situations. Obviously, if somebody is, you know, put something over my mouth and whatever carries me off, then it is what it is. But if people just at least understand that these thoughts are happening and these feelings of anxiety and fear, are happening while women are running, then that's at least a step in the right direction, I guess.
I think that's more than fair. And I think I would just say to Brad, I want to hear from the other women on this panel, to Brad. I would just say to Brad, you know, look, at the very least, women get catcalled and just, you know, shouted at all the time. It is not a leap to think that someone is that brazen that there's one out of 1,000 of those people who would do something worse. I don't know. And I'm not, again, we're not trying to spread hysteria, but I don't think that's irrational for women to have these concerns when, at the very least, they're being harassed. Maria, what would you say to Brad?
I would say that, in one sense, I agree. No, it should be that we don't have to be afraid and that we can run without fear. The reality is that women are harassed, that women are killed and raped and all sorts of other things. And so I think that, and not only that, but, and I can say this just from my personal experience, I was taught from a very, very young age to be afraid. I feel like this is, and I try not to do this with my own children, but I think the message comes across like, you're a girl, you have to be careful in all sorts of situations. And so even before I think we learn that there are things in the world that we have to fear based on our own experiences, we learn that through the messages that we get from people. You know, watch out, be careful, be aware of your surroundings. I don't think little boys are necessarily, I don't have boys, but I don't think little boys are necessarily getting the same message.
Okay, Lisa?
I would totally agree with that. I would like to know if little boys are taught not to wear that, not to do that. You're suggesting things, because I don't think that they are. When you're split up and boys go in one room, girls go in another room, and you're taught how to put your keys in your hands and things like that, I don't think boys or men are being taught that. But going back to Brad, I would have to agree with him a little bit, but I think that goes back to what we were saying earlier. I'm planning my route. I'm going to be aware of where I'm going. I'm going to plan a route where I feel comfortable. I'm going to make sure that there's my surroundings that I'm okay with. But even so, I have to be aware of what's going on when I'm going for my run, because there was one time, I live in a rural area myself. There's houses around, but there's also stretches where there are not many houses around. There's also not very many cars that go by. And if there are cars that go by, sometimes they go by a little fast, and that worries me, whatever. But that's just like a part of running, and that's something that you deal with, just like this fear is something that you deal with. Well, the one day I'm running and a taxi pulled over, and I know it was a taxi because it said taxi on top, pulls over, guy rolls down his window, and he goes, "Do you want a ride?" And my first thought is, oh my God, what am I going to do? And then my second thought was, I said to him, no, thank you. And my third thought is, if he gets out of his car, you better start sprinting towards the closest house, and you know where that is. So that's like a reality that we have to deal with. And unfortunately, it's just there.
Kate, what would you say to Brad, who thinks that some of this conversation is off the rails, that this is not based on reality?
Well, I think that men have been allowed to, and even sometimes trained to, not listen to women. And so I disagree that there is a mountain of evidence that says this is incredibly unlikely. And I think if he were to be able to open up a little bit and listen to the many women's voices, not only on the show today, who are, you know, local runners in our community who are all reporting the exact same experience on a regular daily basis at times, but also talking about the larger, broader movements like the Me Too movement, there is a mountain of evidence and a mountain of women who are now coming out with strong voices saying, this is happening to me regularly, and it's not okay, and it's affecting my daily life. And these are the following ways in which I am not safe at work, on the streets, running, walking in public, anywhere at night, on and on it goes. So, yeah. I think I would ask Brad to open up a little and to examine some of the evidence to the contrary.
Larry and Rod, go ahead, Kate. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I also think that it's very easy to say that statistically it's unlikely that that person who pulls over, who catcalls you, is then going to take it as far as it went with Molly Tibbetts, that that person may not be interested in killing you. However, that doesn't change that the situation has become unsafe, and it is now the woman's job to figure out how far is this person, I don't know, going to go. Is this going to stop at a catcall? Are you going to follow me? Are you going to make other inappropriate comments? Are you going to touch me or grab me? And if I fight back and resist, then what? So this concept of, oh, most of these people are fine, we don't teach our children that when we talk about strangers. It's a fair concept to apply for women as well, that women shouldn't just figure that most people aren't going to take it very far.
Melanie Ryson says, hi, Evan. This is a great show, and I get angry about the constant burden women have to ensure that women have to ensure their own safety. I used to run regularly, and I experienced everything the women on your panel are talking about. I feel that I can't safely walk alone in any isolated area, even a parking garage or a local park. Many men have no understanding of what women go through routinely. Again, that's from Melanie. Thank you for that, Melanie. And before we let Kate Dunleavy go from Resolve, one more time, how to get in touch with your organization, Kate?
You can call Resolve anytime, Monday through Thursday, 9 to 5 at 585-425-1580. You can also email us. Our email address is on our website. You can connect with On the Right through Instagram or Facebook. I believe their website is also up and running or will be soon. Any way you want to connect with us, we are happy to talk with you and support you. Right, thanks so much for your time today.
Yeah, thank you, Kate. That's Kate Dunleavy from Resolve of Greater Rochester. We're going to get our only break of the hour, and we're going to come back. We'll take more of your phone calls. If you're on the phone waiting to talk, we would love to hear from you, so stay there. Eva Petrosino, Maria Hopkins, Lisa Familetti, all joining us, telling us their experiences as women who just want to be able to run in public without being harassed or fear for their own safety. One break and coming right back. I'm Evan Dawson. Friday on The Next Connections, should schools cultivate patriotism? It's one question among many about patriotism in schools and society, addressed in a new book called Patriotic Education in a Global Age. The co-author is University of Rochester Professor Randy Curran. He joins us first hour. Second hour, an upcoming festival at Ganondagan explores Native American food and culture. We'll get a preview and talk about traditional and contemporary indigenous culinary experiences. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Rich in Rochester next on the phone. Go ahead, Rich.
Hi, how you doing, Evan?
Good. I wish we were talking about something else, man, but I think it's important.
Quick comment about the gentleman who said, well, you know, the odds of being hurt or the odds of this or that happening is low. But to the point of what someone said, the people who are making cat calls aren't okay. See, that's the thing that people, I think, men seem to miss. He says, well, he's harmless. A man making a cat call is not harmless, and he's not some innocent person. So, yeah, I think the woman should be aware of it. This is a sort of a simple thing, and it's nowhere near the level of that type of feeling. But that's, as a black man, I used to run a lot, and I knew that when I went through certain neighborhoods, as far as, like, affluent neighborhoods and stuff, I had to be almost conspicuous in the way I approach people. They had to feel safe with me. And if I saw a cop drive by too many times, I would be concerned that someone has told them there's a black man running in my neighborhood. And then also a simple safety thing. I always learned that when you run and with cars, you always made eye contact with that driver when he was turning, she or he was turning or whatever, or crossing your path. Those are just some of the things I want to say.
Yeah, Rich, thank you for that. And, you know, the subject of running while black is a separate but somewhat related conversation, and unfortunately tied to some other events we've seen in the news in the last year. So sorry about that, Rich, but thank you for that perspective. And on the subject of looking drivers in the eye, I had an email from a listener saying, you know, Lisa talked about when cars speed up around them when women are running. But a woman wrote to me to say, well, what about when cars slow down and that feeling of, you know, why is this person slowing down? And should I be assuming they're slowing down because of me? Or, you know, and again, I'm sure tons of cars have slowed down around me when I'm running. I do not have to think, why is this car slowing down? Does that go through your mind? I guess you're always aware of what's around you.
Yeah, I mean, I'm always aware of what's around me. That does that does pass my mind. Like, you're thinking, like, if they're slowing down, I hope they're turning into, like, their driveway, or I hope they're going to make a turn or something like that. But, I mean, kind of going back to our caller really quickly, I just want people to remember that Rochester is still a city. It doesn't matter where we are. Like, this happens here. It really does. Like, women are followed. We are aware of it. It doesn't matter where we are or what's going on. Like, again, this is just a reality that we deal with in our daily lives.
Let me get another phone call from Watkins Glen, listening on Finger Lakes Public Radio, WEOS. This is Beth. Go ahead, Beth.
Hello, and thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I wanted to mention that I'm in my 70th year, and everything that's being said by the women today just brings back all the memories of the many years when I was younger that I had to avoid certain spots in and corners just to go to school because of the way that the men or boys would give their catcalls. And so that's one point. And the other being that, yes, we need to teach our daughters this because it is one way to protect them. As bad as it is, I don't think it's going to change anytime soon.
Mm. Beth, thank you. Do you all agree with Beth that you don't think it's going to change, that this is?
I mean, it's a generational thing for sure. You know, I don't think that it's going to be solved in the next 6 months before my daughter has her 7th birthday. I think I'm going to have to tell my daughter how to approach going out in public as a woman. You know, yeah, unfortunately, that's, and that's part of the position that I've taken is, you know, I've sort of accepted that this is my life and this is how I need to exist in the world. I hope that one day, you know, another woman doesn't have to exist like that or accept that existence and that sort of, oh, I don't know what the right word is, but I just hope that, yeah, I hope that in, you know, 2 decades that this is not happening still.
Well, there's certainly a Me Too aspect of this, that women are sharing their stories, and the more that these are shared and everybody understands them, not just women, in the same way we hope that there is more hesitation on the behalf of people who would harass others, whether it's in Hollywood or anywhere, that the Me Too movement may have an impact on this. So I don't know. Eva, I think it's probably logical to think that this doesn't end in 6 months, a year, 5 years, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. But you guys agree, Maria?
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't. I'm sure not. It will not end in 6 months. But I do think this is a conversation that we're sitting here having right now. And so there are a lot of people who are now aware of the way that women are feeling when they're running, that they in a way that they weren't aware of before this program started. And so I think that we keep having these conversations, and it raises everyone's awareness. So we're looking out for each other a little bit, and we're not necessarily, you know, we're not necessarily tolerating it from one another when we see someone, you know, harassing someone or putting someone in an awkward situation or making them feel afraid. So I think these conversations are an important step in the right direction.
Okay, Lisa.
I would have to agree. I think these conversations are important. I think that it's going to be a long time before we see change, but I think that as a nation, our mentality of boys will be boys has to kind of go away. I think that that's actually a huge problem in our culture, and that men need to step up and be macho or be strong in a certain way, I feel like, with putting women down. And I don't necessarily think that's the approach to it. You know, we do need to be more equal and respectful of each other, and hopefully we'll start to see more of that in years to come.
And I suspect, even just catcalling, if you're a man and somebody else around you does that, I would suspect our panelists would like anybody to step up and get in their face and say, that is not acceptable, at a minimum, yeah?
Definitely.
Yeah, I mean, I don't need a fist fight, no. But it is nice to hear somebody say, like, dude, that's not cool. Like, it's just not needed.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't think there's any better. I mean, I wonder if that's ever worked for anyone. You know, has it one time out of 10 times has it ever worked for you? If so, then maybe I could see why it would still happen. But I can't think of a single woman that would like that to happen to her. So I can't imagine that anybody would say, like, oh, yeah, you know, hey, but no one's going to do that. So why do you then keep doing it? Do you think that it's going to every other time that you're going to have a different reaction. That's like the definition of insanity, isn't it?
Yeah. I did have a woman say to me yesterday, like, when you get older, you'll understand, you'll like it. And I'm like, no, I don't like it now, and I don't think I'll like it then. And it's just, again, change it. I don't want to be 72 and getting catcalled walking down the street. You know, I just, I'm over it.
Well, let me bring in another voice to the conversation. Calling in from the Willow Domestic Violence Center is Jennifer Sullivan, who is the Community Programs Manager for Willow. Jennifer, thanks for taking the time. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Well, good. And again, this is a conversation that's been tough and important. And we're all just trying to, I hope men in the audience, me included, are just trying to listen this hour. What do you want listeners to know about what women deal with, particularly in light of the Molly Tibbetts story, but really just day to day what women deal with?
Well, I think the most important thing for people to consider is their safety and making sure that they know what to do to keep themselves safe and take that responsibility. Unfortunately, we all have to be responsible for our own safety, and there's a lot of ways that people can do that. And safety planning is really largely about being aware of the risks and aware of your surroundings. For example, be aware of who is around you as well as ways to safely exit a situation if needed. It's also good to switch up your routine as much as possible and make sure that people know where you are and when you're expected back. Be on the phone with somebody if you are somewhere that you don't feel safe, and make sure that that person knows exactly where you are in case they need to contact the police for you. If you are out for a run, there's apps such as Met My Run that can show people exactly where you are if you trust them and you want them to know that information. There are also numerous safety apps such as Noon Light and Circle of Six that can alert the authorities of your location and that you need help, or contact trusted people in your phone to let them know that your safety is at risk and where you are. And if you do think somebody might be following you, a good rule to follow is to take 4 right turns. If you do that, then you're not going anywhere. You're traveling in a circle, so that there's no logical reason why somebody might still be behind you. And if they are, it is very likely that that person is following you and you should go somewhere safe immediately. But at its core, safety planning is about trusting your gut and your own sense of safety. So if you are somewhere where you don't feel safe, reach out to somebody, call a family member, call a friend, or call Willow. And our 24-hour hotline can help develop personalized safety plans with people.
All right, what's the hotline?
222-SAFE.
222-SAFE. There's another resource for you. 222-SAFE. And before we lose this program, I'll let Jennifer go. 222-SAFE. Keep that in mind. Jennifer, thanks for calling in for the program and telling us about just another resource that's out there. We appreciate it.
Absolutely. You're very welcome.
Jennifer Sullivan from the Willow Domestic Violence Center. Here's one I want to read before we lose this hour. Jessica writes to us and says, I often hear, if you wear more clothes, people are less likely to bother you. Yes, totally my fault if I get harassed, she says, with an eye roll emoji. That's a good use of that emoji, by the way. But let's talk about that. It has been scalding hot the last few days. Anybody who's running, you know, what are you going to wear, a parka? So how do you feel about that? What you can and can't run in this notion that, if you just simply wear more clothes, you won't be harassed.
Yeah, on my way in today, I'm turning on State Street. And a guy's running down the street with no shirt on, and he's got his headphones in, and he's, you know, just doing his thing. He's running. He's doing what I would have loved to be doing right now. And I know that guy, the thought has never crossed his mind that, oh, well, I need to put a shirt on because what if somebody approaches me, or what if somebody shouts something at me? But I have that thought, you know, when it's 90 degrees or 80 degrees or even, I mean, it's hot to run in 70 degree weather, let's be honest. And if I'm wearing a sports bra and some like running shorts, I don't want to have to think, well, maybe I should put on another shirt so that people aren't looking at my belly. Or, you know, it's just, these are things that we don't want to have to think about so that we can go back to doing what we're originally doing, which is just trying to stay healthy or clear our minds or whatever.
Maria?
It's something that I give a lot of thought to when I leave the house. I personally would never run in a sports bra. And the reason is I do not want to draw any more attention to myself than I already do by being out on the road, by being one of the only people out on the road. And yes, we have to wear, we cannot wear a parka when we're running. But we're not wearing anything different than what we would wear necessarily to an amusement park or to even to the supermarket, or for me anyway. I don't have a lot of time for people who, you know, for that victim blaming at this point. We're talking about it being, you know, a woman's fault for dressing in a particular way. I've really had enough of that, quite frankly.
Lisa?
Yeah, I've had enough of the blame game, too, with it's about how women dress. I kind of think that that's really silly. And for me to go running outside in a sports bra, one, takes a lot of self-confidence for me to do that because I just don't feel comfortable personally wearing that because I do have low self-esteem and low confidence when it comes to those things. But then I also think I don't want the extra attention. The few times that I have gone running in just a sports bra, I'm usually, again, with another group of women or with another female friend. Definitely would never go running in just a sports bra around any of my male friends. Again, even if it's a male friend, I just don't feel comfortable doing it.
So about 20 seconds to my colleague Lisa Familetti from XXI. What do you want, especially the men listening to this hour, to take away from this program?
Oh my gosh. I think just be aware of what some of us have to go through that probably you might not have thought about before and try to put yourselves in our shoes a little bit more, especially when women are walking to their cars at night or going for a run or just kind of being a woman in general.
Thank you for sharing your experiences. And I really appreciate all of you being here, helping us see and hear about what you go through. And I do hope we keep that in mind. Lisa Familetti, I'll see you around the building here at WXXI. Thank you for being here. Our thanks to Maria Hopkins, a college professor and a runner. Nice to see you. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
And Eva Petrosino, communications professional and a runner. Thank you, Eva.
Thanks for having me.
Our thanks to Rob Braden, engineer, Megan Mack, producer. I'm Evan Dawson. Have a nice afternoon, and we'll talk to you Friday on member-supported public radio.